Welcome back. It's a Monday, the first day of August, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call, and let's start off our look with what's going on around the nation and the world today with a question. Is nutcase Nancy so anxious to kick off a global world war, this time with China, that she's willing to commit suicide to do it? In spite of repeated warnings from the ruling Communist Chinese Party that they would shoot her down if she entered Taiwan's airspace and attempted to land, the speaker for the traitors still seems intent on doing it anyway, and maybe landing in Taiwan on Tuesday evening. British tabloids like The Sun are reporting it this way, under the headline, War of Words. China's chilling war signal, it says, has allegedly been heard in official circles as the country holds military drills near Taiwan. And the phrase, don't say we didn't warn you, was issued before China's last two major wars and has now been invoked again as it conducts military drills ahead of nutcase Nancy Pelosi's proposed visit to Taiwan. Zero Hedge, for example, quoting the Liberty Times, reports, citing people familiar with the matter, that Pelosi plans to visit the legislative yuan in Taiwan and meet lawmakers on Wednesday. However, runs the continuous caveat, the U.S. and Taiwan are still preparing for last-minute changes. I guess it's always possible somebody could have an attack of sanity. And as of 10:55 a.m. Eastern Time Monday morning, Zero Hedge had an update saying that the vast majority of breathless Western media reports about nutcase Nancy's now imminent visit to Taiwan, or is it suicide by PLA, are being sourced to Taiwanese media and officials. And among those outlets, it seems they are pretty well agreed, quote, she's definitely coming, based on an unnamed source that said people with whom Mrs. Pelosi is planning to meet in Taiwan have been informed of her imminent arrival, though details remain in flux. Some of the meetings have been scheduled for Tuesday evening. Most are set for Wednesday, and they include, but aren't limited to, Taiwanese government officials. And these reports have now been echoed by Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal. And to underscore the increasing level of tensions, China's conducting live fire exercises in the waters near Pingtan Island of Fujian Province, which sits opposite Taiwan. The Global Times has reported that their maritime administration has issued a warning on Monday prohibiting entry into that area in the South China Sea due to military exercises from Tuesday through Saturday. And the Navy's 7th Fleet, including the Ronald Reagan Carrier Strike Group, has been moved into the area as well. There's no shortage of commentary today about the deep state attempt to goad China into taking out Nancy Pelosi's plane and opening another front in World War III. Gordon Chang via 1945.com and Zero Hedge quotes a portion of the phone call between Xi Jinping and whoever was playing the role of the Biden Führer on that day, who told the mass senile one and anybody else that was listening on the line that the position of the Chinese government and people on the Taiwan question is consistent, and resolutely safeguarding China's national sovereignty and territorial integrity is the firm will of the more than 1.4 billion Chinese people. The public opinion, he said, cannot be defied. Those who play with fire will perish by it, unquote. Which certainly sounds like a threat, doesn't it? Says the author, the report swirling around what's now the most watched flight on planet Earth suggests that either Xi Jinping perceives the Biden Führer to be so weak that he can push him around, which is pretty well obvious, or that China's internal problems are so severe that the ruling Communist Chinese Party must create an external crisis to distract the Chinese people. In the worst case, and this is probably the true case, folks, both are true. For at least a decade, it says, Chinese leaders have believed the United States to be in terminal decline, and they'd have to have been blind to have missed that, and the Biden Führer, at least in their minds, has confirmed this view, given his calamitous withdrawal from Afghanistan, what the author calls his failure to stop the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Now, come on, give me a break. They pushed him into that. Have left Beijing thinking they can now do whatever they want to Taiwan. And at the same time, it's possible Xi's threats could be the result of regime insecurity, and he needs an external crisis so that the Chinese people won't think too much about the numerous and increasing internal ones. Inside China, there's still the Fauci flu problem. Xi's dynamic zero-COVID policy is causing widespread resentment, not to mention undermining the already ailing economy, which despite their Bureau of Lying Statistics report of about 0.4% year-to-year growth in the second quarter is almost certainly in contraction. And, of course, the debt crisis, delayed for more than a decade, has been hitting the country on all cylinders. Evergrande Group, other large property developers are defaulting like collapsing dominoes, and there's the problem of a growing nationwide mortgage boycott by non-paying banks, which has now spread to suppliers of those failing developers, with the result that financial institutions across the country are
tight on cash. And there are, of course, bank runs. We've reported them here, especially in Hainan province. But banks in the financial capital of Shanghai are also in poor condition. And this should certainly come as no surprise to regular listeners. When communism runs into economic collapse, which history shows is ultimately inevitable, solution number one is always a war. Xi's leading a nationwide mobilization effort, says the author, something signaled by the amendment of China's National Defense Law, effective at the beginning of last year, to transfer power from civilian to military officials, which contemplates the mass mobilization of their society for war. Owners of private property, and this certainly doesn't surprise anyone, are now being told to manufacture whatever the party dictates, a move seen as building up stockpiles for the coming conflict. And many American analysts, says the author, believe that Speaker for the Traders, nutcase Nancy Pelosi, is provoking a crisis with her reported plans to visit the self-governing island of Taiwan, which, of course, Beijing claims is sovereign Chinese territory. But Gordon Chang claims that view is incorrect. Because Xi Jinping, he writes, needs no provocation from the speaker to lash out. And he gives any number of examples of recent provocations. And here your host has to interject that while that may be true, folks, that doesn't mean that the deep state isn't going to try to provoke them anyway. But it's the why that I think is most interesting. And why now? Concludes Chang, the Chinese Defense Ministry on July 28th, in connection with the reported trip of Pelosi to Taiwan, stated that action is the most powerful language. Chinese journalist Hu Zhijin, who's often used to signal regime positions, on July 29 detailed the circumstances in which China's military is prepared to bring down the speaker's plane, meaning that ultimately there are no longer any safe options. And here he claims that the most dangerous of those options, at least in the long run, is for the speaker to, get this folks, back down. Because by doing that, she would legitimize the most belligerent elements in the communist Chinese capital by showing everyone else that threats work. This is now more than just a test of will. And can you just hear those war drums a-banging? And since I started recording this segment, folks, the Chinese People's Liberation Army says another breathless update from the Daily Mail has issued another warning to nutcase Nancy ahead of her expected trip to Taiwan, with a video simulating a missile strike, advancing aircraft carriers and fighter jets in formation, as well as a stern warning from state-controlled media. In other words, their version of the New York Times. The video was posted on WeChat Monday morning following reports that the speaker for the traders will do what the Chinese have warned her not to, arrive in Taipei on Tuesday night. And there's a whole lot more in here, but this is interesting. Amid the threat, Taiwanese officials have reportedly canceled leave for soldiers and officers to immediately prepare for the prospect of war. And here, folks, your host can't help but pause and observe that there's just so much about this that stinks to high heaven. Wouldn't it normally be the Secretary of State who makes these official visits to reassure our allies? Well, I guess this Secretary of State wouldn't reassure anybody, but hey, come to think of it, neither would nutcase Nancy. What's wrong with the government of Taiwan that they'd want to meet with her so badly that they're willing to risk war anyway? Especially, folks, when she says things like she wants to talk with them about our shared values. Oh, really? You mean like wanting to kill masses of people, abuse their children, and push perversion in schools? Those shared values? I mean, really, think about it. Just what does she accomplish other than the obvious? Starting a war, one way or another. But what's really interesting to me is that I can't shake the idea that the deep state is throwing her up there as a sacrificial pawn, or sacrificial queen. Do they want her dead and gone that badly? Are they trying to make her a martyr or something else? Don't forget, she is number three in line for the throne, disgusting as that is, and it's certainly got to be part of the calculation here. The marionette-in-chief is clearly beyond senile. The fact that he hasn't been removed via the 25th Amendment tells you just how far gone the nation really is anyway. And the so-called vice president may be literally the only person on planet Earth with a lower popularity rating, and even more importantly, less qualified, well, unless you count the obvious qualification that got her there, and if anything, she would be even more of an international joke, no doubt cackling all the way. So now they're putting nutcase Nancy front and center, or is it on the chopping block? And given that she's pretty well renowned for her cowardice when it comes to anything actually involving work or political courage, you gotta wonder what they threatened her with. One thing's for sure, folks, this one certainly bears watching. But given all the distractions today, we certainly don't want to forget the other World War III front. Here's one from The Blaze about Germany, which is certainly planning to be cut off from energy supplies and looking for a long, really cold winter. Some of Germany's biggest cities, says the story, are preparing for an energy crunch this winter by shutting off warm water, limiting heat, and switching off lighting. For example, the German city of Hanover is attempting to reduce their energy consumption by 15%. And they've announced that between October the 1st and March 31, the municipal buildings in Hanover will not be allowed to be heated over a temperature of 68 degrees Fahrenheit. They banned the use of mobile air conditioning units and fan heaters. And meanwhile, the citizens there will be forced to take cold showers at city-run facilities, while the German city will cut off hot water in public buildings, swimming pools, and gyms. And they're not the only German city cutting back on energy use. Munich announced they would turn off spotlights on their town hall. They shut off warm water at municipal offices, and they're turning off the fountains in Germany's third largest city at night. While Nuremberg has closed three of its four indoor public pools. And the list goes on and on. When you look at it, folks, it certainly does sound like they're getting the German folks all prepped for the next war, doesn't it? Or at least a great reset. And I guess speaking of the Great Reset, this story fits here. Starting Monday, it'll be a criminal offense in the People's Republic of Israel to pay more than the equivalent of $1,700 in cash to a business or $4,360 in cash to any individual as the socialist government there intensifies their ongoing war on tangible currency. It began in earnest in 2018 with the passage of the so-called Law for the Reduction of the Use of Cash, where Israeli businesses and individuals began to face limits on cash transactions as of 2019. But now that August 1st is here, those limits are being basically slashed in half. And the penalties for transgressors are severe. 25% to 30% is the state's intended cut. They've made almost $5 billion on these fines since they started them back in 2019, said Tamar Braca for the Israeli State Tax Authority. We want the public to reduce the use of cash money because the goal is to reduce cash fluidity in the market. And get this. Oh, yeah, sure. Mainly because crime organizations tend to rely on cash. And, of course, when it comes to all you peons, that means you. It's yet another great big piece of the Great Reset and, of course, the Mark of the Beast, too. And by the way, if you still harbor any doubts on that score, Tyler Durden for Zero Hedge notes that the war on cash isn't the only way Israel is leading the way to a totalitarian future. They've also started technical trials for a CBDC, Central Bank Digital Currency, which could also help eradicate cash and maximize control. They've got their digital vaccination passports to bar the unvaxxed and now the unboosted from participating in various aspects of life. They're maintaining that controversial biometric database on millions of citizens and have joined the group of eight countries working towards development of the mark of the, digital identities along with facial recognition programs. And I gotta say it, folks, I can't help but remember when some Israelis and lots of Jews in the rest of the world understood very well what the phrase never again meant. Now, sadly, it looks instead like they've taken a whole bunch of pages right out of the Nazi playbook. Next, via Natural News and Lance D. Johnson, some more revelations about how well the genocide was planned. Although I guess if the planning was perfect, we wouldn't even be finding this out. America's First Legal, or AFL, has filed a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, to investigate what they call, correctly, unconstitutional acts between the federal government and the Big Brother public-private partnership of big tech socialist media platforms. And as a result, AFL obtained 256 pages of communication between the Centers for Death and Control, CDC, Gulag, to Facebook and Twitter, which document egregious violations of the Bill of Rights, Constitution, and other things that were once called the supreme law of the land, and provide evidence that Big Brother violated the Nuremberg Code to boot. And here Johnson quotes a statement from AFL President Stephen Miller, who said that these explosive smoking gun documents obtained as a result of litigation against the regime conclusively demonstrate that big tech has, quote, unlawfully colluded with the federal government to silence, censor, and suppress Americans' free speech and violate their First Amendment rights. Not to mention their rights to life, liberty, and property, your host can't help but add. Government is expressly prohibited, he says, from censoring competing or dissenting viewpoints or from silencing its political opponents, whether it does so directly or whether it uses an outside corporation to achieve its draconian totalitarian ends. And they added they will not rest in the fight against illegal collusion between Big Brother and Big Tech. And you may recall this. 1 year ago, July 2021, the former White House press spokeslayer, Jen Psaki, revealed that the Biden regime was, quote, regularly making sure to identify public health disinformation while working with socialist media platforms in order to have it removed, quote, and we work to engage with them, big tech, to better understand the enforcement, Achtung, of social media platform policies, she proclaimed, so that the Biden regime went public with their censorship goals, targeting 12 sources of information that they claimed were, quote, the dirty disinformation dozen. And the regime subsequently called on big tech to completely remove these individuals from all social media platforms. Before, folks, most of them were proven to be 100% correct in warning the people about what was being done to them. According to the latest document release, officials with the CDC und the Biden regime colluded with content moderation teams at Gulag to Facebook and Twitter to block U.S. citizens from receiving even the most basic level of informed consent about the emergency use authorization of what we now know are the COVID-19 not vaccines. And the government not only violated the free speech clause of the United States Constitution and First Amendment, but they also conspired to withhold relevant medical information in the informed consent process, violating basic medical ethics, they note, on a massive scale. The Nazis, at least, are probably feeling vindicated. Especially, folks, if you recall that the first principle of the Nuremberg Code has to do with the voluntary consent of the human subjects. The CDC smoking gun documents themselves detail regular communications between the federal government and the three biggest socialist media platforms, which included regular be-on-the-lookout meetings to identify information that conflicted with the CDC's vax everybody, whether they like it or not, agenda. And federal officials also provided examples of posts that should be flagged and, in many cases, censored entirely. In the case of two Facebook, they kindly gifted the CDC $15 million worth of ad credits used to promote socialist distancing, travel restrictions, and, of course, the almighty vaccine, while hiding relevant information about how deadly they just might turn out to be, and in fact did. The Center for Death and Control even went so far as to establish a list of, quote, verifiable identification sources with two Facebook to protect social media posts released by the State Department of, get this laugh, health. Orwell certainly had that one nailed. At Twitter, employees arranged regular chats with CDC officials while they warned Facebook officials that their algorithms weren't doing a good enough job at eliminating what they called vaccine misinformation, i.e., I think that means, folks, people dropping dead like flies. Twitter officials reached out to the Center for Death and Control, asking for help to identify such misinformation that needed to be censored. Whereupon the kind death control officials sent Twitter officials an official chart detailing the tweets that they wanted targeted as misinformation. Specifically, things about vaccine injury, vaccine shedding, risk of miscarriages, menstrual cycle disruption, and information about genetic alterations caused by the not vaccine. At Gulag, though, death control officials went one step further. They edited Gulag's code for their so-called knowledge base, and the edits were focused on promoting isolation and mask and vaccine use, while CDC officials told the company to use the search engine itself to promote the CDC's own, I'll say it, folks, deadly disinformation, i.e. vaccine page. And they also utilized the infamous Gulag Signal Boost technology to promote similar propaganda coming from who? The World Health Organization, as well as to promote, quote, comprehensive global training on tracking, analyzing, and addressing misinformation. Unless you think that the Fourth Reich fascists didn't actually learn anything from the Nuremberg trials, there's this. CDC officials didn't want to get caught colluding with socialist media, so in the emails, the officials instructed Twitter employees not to share their directives. Quote, please do not share outside your trust and safety teams, they wrote. The CDC, concludes the article, has tried to bury important information about the COVID not vaccines, information that, back when we still had such a thing as medical ethics, would have been considered essential to the informed consent process. And the fact that these people haven't yet been brought to trial, folks, tells you just how effective the Fourth Reich's final solution still is. I do have to call this a related story, although it combines a number of different aspects of the decline and fall of the American empire. This comes from P. Michael Phillips via the Brownstone Institute and was picked up by Zero Hedge about the Pentagon, which, he says, owns their own recruiting crisis. Replenishing the military ranks, it begins, with qualified personnel is a perennial challenge. It's no secret, though, that this year, the armed forces of these once-free United States are fighting uphill to recruit and retain talent. And many of the services are well behind their quotas, but it's the Army, the largest service, that's having the hardest time enticing young Americans. They'll fall short by nearly 20,000 troops from their original target and strength of 485,000 for fiscal year 22, and next year will probably be even worse. To manage, it says, Army officials have slashed strength and enlistment goals, while recruiters are offering fat stacks of cash and generous service terms as inducements. But so far, nothing is working. Liars like the Army Chief of Staff blame the shortfall on competition with the private sector, while others blame upwardly mobile families who'd rather their children attend college than wear a uniform, or maybe they'd rather their children just not keel over dead. Both are old sauce, and they ring hollow, especially this year. Yeah, civilian jobs do pay more, it says, but for your average 18-year-old with a high school diploma, military compensation is nothing to sneeze at, and indeed, recruits more often cite generous pay and benefits as a reason for signing the papers. Meanwhile, undergraduate enrollments are down over 600,000 from last year, so it appears that missing recruits aren't trading rifles for books either. So instead of blaming the competition, Pentagon brass would be better advised, says this author, to dwell on their own tarnished image as the reason fewer young Americans want to sign up. And Harry cites a November 2021 poll showing that public trust in the military has plunged steeply since 2018. Respondents cite politicized leaders, scandals, and of course the bungled withdrawal from Afghanistan for their loss in confidence. And let's not forget, adds the author, the list of suicides, sexual assaults, social justice indoctrination, which is now completely out of control, and COVID not vaccination policies, mandates, that dull the shine of military service and maybe just kill soldiers, sailors, and Marines outright. And while your host can't help but think that there might be a lot of people who don't want to serve under a marionette-in-chief whose prevailing interest seems to be destroying the United States rather than protecting it, but I have to agree with the author when he says of this whole list, the Pentagon's noxious vaccine mandate is probably the deepest self-inflicted wound. Let's not forget, while the service chiefs beg Congress to fund more generous recruiting incentives, they have in fact been forcibly discharging thousands of vaccine dissenters, including most if not all of those objecting on religious grounds. And a similar fate awaits tens of thousands more of the unjabbed in the National Guard and Reserves. Never mind that our military increasingly relies on these part-time troops for routine mission support. And instead of learning the lesson and doing the right thing for the country's defense, your host can't help but think, the Pentagon has doubled down. Submission to the not vaccine is now a condition of enlistment, despite volumes of evidence that the therapy is at best ineffective and at worst outright deadly and dangerous for young people, especially those who are universally healthy enough they don't need the stinking poison poke Zyklon B injection anyway. Suggests the author, it's a policy that's gravely alienating to the families of middle America whose children disproportionately serve in our all-volunteer, well, at least for now, forces. And before going further, consider that fewer than one quarter of Americans in the prime recruitment age, 17 to 24 years old, can even meet our military's physical, moral, oops, wait a minute, I'm not going to put that in there, or educational entry requirements. And that figure continues to decline to the point where only about 9% of young Americans have any desire to serve, and perhaps only 1% ever actually do. The author notes another interesting irony here. The derogatory term used for the place where most American military recruits come from now is called flyover country, a place where, amazingly, patriotism, faith, family, and public service remains in fashion. But the belief by some that the vaccine mandates are intended to purge conservative Christians from the armed forces may be one reason recruiting offices are empty. After all, people living in these prime recruitment areas do tend to be somewhat more religious and more conservative in outlook than many Americans. They're also far less likely to be Zyklon B injected, or to want to kill themselves. In short, and I'll paraphrase it this way, the Pentagon's Zyklon B mandate is breaking faith with its once loyal base, and the longer they dig in, the worse that'll get. Your host, of course, thinks that's the plan. So I suggest is this final story. Zero Hedge says food pantries and food banks are a key economic indicator for tracking poverty levels and financial instability. And they're not only speaking loudly. Over the last couple of months, they've been ringing alarm bells because stagflationary pressures have all but wiped out the savings of the average American, driven up credit card debt to historic highs, and resulted in record demand and shortages at food banks across the nation. No, the regime won't call it a recession. It really is a depression, folks. But the key is, it's still summertime. Historically, crunches like this max out in wintertime. And unless you're a token idiot in the Biden cabinet, you can surely guess what that means. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.